Hello, and welcome to the Lying Media Bastards radio show.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living room. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We'll be right back.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Lying Media Bastards show on Radioactive San Diego. As you may have heard, this past week, the Republicans were largely voted out of the U.S. Congress, which is good news. As a default, the Democrats are taking those seats. The Democrats, I guess, technically then won, although nobody I know actually voted for the Democrats because they like the Democrats. So Republicans get a good, thorough stomping, and that's very satisfying. So that just last song, that was Atari Teenage Riot doing Death of a President DIY. I am suggesting nothing. For that, Chris Cornell and Maynard James Keenan, the band's Audio Slave and Tool, respectively. What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, cover of the Nick Lowe song. For that, a song that was recommended by our pal Amanda over at the Pandagon political blog in honor of the Republican defeat. TKO by La Tigre. TKO meaning technical knockout. Meaning, I believe in boxing, if you knock someone down three times, even if they are not knocked unconscious, that is considered a technical knockout. And a TKO does seem fitting for the Republican loss. And also part of the chorus there is, don't you know this is our dance floor? So I do kind of enjoy that idea of, excuse me, Republicans, this is our place, you have to go. And we started it off with, I was frantically trying to find what would be the best song to kick off this whole thing. And I failed. I don't know that I had any good songs picked out. But we went with Bad Religion, You Are the Government, which is slightly fitting. So yeah, I'm Jake, Lying Media Bastard Show. Obviously today I'm going to talk a lot about the election. What does this mean for the future? Got to remind everybody that the Democrats do suck, and I don't even mean they suck in terms of, oh, they're good people, but they're just incompetent, or they're weak-willed, or no. The Democrats, while they do favor the American middle class on a number of issues, they work on a number of really horrific assumptions which hurt people all over the place. Issues that are important that are not on the table. Issues that they don't even think about, which are hurting millions of people around the world. We must talk about this. And so, one down, one to go. Knock down the Republicans, got to get the Democrats out. And then after that, destroy capitalism, racism, sexism, homophobia, classism, raise everybody up out of poverty, destruction of the nation state, we have several things to do, is what I'm saying. Getting the Republicans out of office was an important part. I believe we may have saved the people of Iran. So congratulations, America. You may have helped stave off an invasion of Iran that would have killed hundreds of thousands of people, both Americans and Iranians. So good work. But yeah, I'll talk a lot about that today, and have to talk about Oaxaca some as well. We have to keep this in the news. Otherwise, I'm afraid that the Mexican government, the Mexican army that is down in Oaxaca, where the people are still rebelling, if we let that be forgotten, I think then the Mexican government, when no one is looking, will go and smash things up. So we got to keep that on the news. And then, a little bit of media news here and there. Sounds like there might be some possibilities in... for non-profit organizations to get some actual... Actually, let me hold off on that. I was sent an email which said that the FCC is actually going to give out some free radio licenses to non-profit organizations, but I don't know much more than that, so I'll hold off on that. I need to call up the folks at Prometheus Radio Project, who are wise in those ways, and ask them what's going on, and I'll post it on my site, talk about it next week, perhaps. Later in the show, I just got the latest spoken word album by Jello Biafra, former singer of the Dead Kennedys, of course. Now he runs a record label, is an activist, and does this sort of weird, he calls it spoken word, but it's sort of this weird mix of poetry, sort of poetry, comedy, and political lecture. He's put out eight collected albums of these, and the latest one just recently came out called In the Grip of Official Treason. Let's play a little bit of that. And I should mention San Diego. Biafra will be performing at Epicenter here in San Diego on the 17th. And the same day, he'll be doing a meet and greet at Lou's Records in Encinitas. So you might want to check into that. I personally won't want to because just in the past few days, I've listened to 3 hours worth of his lectures on this spoken word album. So I've had my fill at the moment. But I will have to share one track with you shortly. I'll intro it later. Now... I'm a little angry at you folks in the audience, and I shouldn't be. This is totally irrational, but I've vaguely known for a while that there is this band, hardcore band, with the initials MDC. And maybe at some point I even knew what MDC meant. I wasn't really paying attention when someone told me, or I'd forgotten. But I was just reminded this week, MDC stands for Millions of Dead Cops. Why didn't I know this? Why didn't you, the audience, tell me, hey, Jake, there's a band out there you might like called Millions of Dead Cops? I'm blaming you, and I know at the same time that it's irrational. I should have known this, and it doesn't feel like it's my fault, so I'm blaming everyone but me. But yeah, obviously, so I... after remembering this or rediscovering it or discovering it for the first time, I had to track down some tracks from MDC. So here we go. This is going to be I'll play a couple tracks of theirs during the day. This is MDC doing a Corporate Death Burger. If you listen to the show live, you can hop on your AOL or Yahoo Instant Messenger, send a message to Radioactive SD, and I will get it, and you can give me song requests or complaints or say, it's not my fault you didn't know, you jerk. Or if you're listening to the podcast, send me an email, jake@lyingmediabastards.com. Thanks for listening. And, yeah.
And your heart off wreck. I'm breaking all your necks and half flex. Know the mathematic formulas of fury. Hey, let's go the path of the terror dome zone. Dweller never gone gold. Nigga better phone home. Tell a melochrome tombstone. Head up on a pedestal of medical attention. Couldn't ever make it better from the metaphor of lynching. Now get up out the kitchen before you burn with the diction. With your head up in the stitches and you learn with conviction. I'm addicted to inflicting you with your self-doubt. Sticking the key to the ignition and I blow meltdown. Facilities be little MCs. We killing them. Squeeze the mental trigger when I end up spitting venom with ease. Bring it. MCs are in. Power of a bar train. Naturally the coolest one. I'm rolling with my bar train. Fill me up with octane.
Mentally, I'm my brain. Coming down the chimney, slipping gifts up in your stock gangs. I came to win, not just to play because I got gang. Niggas playing hard and can't identify with my pain. Cleaning hemoglobin off your sweater after I stain. Fit condition lyricism like Jack LaLanne. My main point is just to show you I'm the disoink. Rappers never captivate, I'd rather hear a pig oink. Pinpoint precision, impairing y'all's vision. A lyrical wizard, cold microphone magician. Pull a rabbit out of hat and send it back to his habitat. You're buried in the pages of my rhyme flow. Avalanche, put the smack down on your candy ass. Critic the extravagant battle cat. Total in your Cadillac. Matter factly, black delicious in your factory. Batter rap beat, busting pus out your acne. Plan the wax scheme to attack me. Shatter that dream at a rapid ass speed. Black, bring it back, bro. MCs are in. MCs are in. MCs are in.
fight the machines and make me be. Cut this life off from me. Hold my breath as I wish for death. Oh, please, God, wake me.
Metallica, ladies and gentlemen. Many of you may remember back before Metallica sucked. That was back good Metallica. That was one off Injustice for All. Many of you may have seen the Rock video for a music video for that song, which is entirely clips from the movie Johnny Got His Gun, based on the novel by Donald Trumbo, I believe. One of the more powerful anti-war pieces that there's been in... decades, really. It's about a young man who goes off to fight in World War II, I believe. There's an explosion. He wakes up. He's in a hospital bed. He can't see, can't hear, can't taste, can't move. And it's revealed that his face has been blown off, and he's lost his arms and legs, and he's just a mute, blind, deaf torso laying in a hospital bed being kept alive by tubes. And then he's tormented by memories and hallucinations, and he's just horrified. He wants to die, but he can't communicate with anyone to let them know that he wants to die. And I haven't seen the whole film. I've just seen in the video. In the video, it looks as though he manages to communicate with one of his nurses through a series of, like, nodding his head to make Morse code, kinda, and manages to communicate with her and let her know that he wishes he was dead, and she obliges him and gives him a mercy killing. So, yay war. And Metallica, of course, I don't know that all the subtlety of all of that movie and story is contained within that ballad-slash-speed-metal piece, but, it's still a good song. Now, before that, we had Prince doing Kiss, the Von Bondies doing Come On, Come On, Blackalicious doing Trouble, Eve of Destruction, and we started it off with Millions of Dead Cops doing Corporate Death Burger. So I'm Jake, Lime Media Bastard Show. The election. Let us speak upon it. As you know, the Democrats needed a... Well, actually, let's start a little before that. In 92, the Republicans swept the Congress in this landslide victory based upon what they called it the Contract with America, which was this this propaganda PR thing they came up with, say, this is what's wrong with the country, and this is what we're going to do to fix it. Vote us in, and we'll have this contract. We have this promise to you, the American people, to make these things happen. And it's really been a very mean-spirited Republican Party ever since then. I mean, you know, apart from the usual, let's do what we can for our big business cronies and fuck the poor, this was even meaner somehow. How was it meaner? I really can't explain it. I don't know how you get meaner than spitting on homeless people, but they've accomplished it. Now the Republicans didn't have sole control ever since then, but it's gone back and forth a bit. And during all of the George W. Bush years, it has been a one-party Congress, and it was just amazing to see what they did with it. You know, of course there was the usual corruption, cronyism, and whatnot, but they just ran that place like a fucking dictatorship. They came in there. And you know, all of these you know, committees and debates and all that are supposed to have both parties involved. The Republicans were totally rigging everything so they could do it without the Democrats. You know, they'd have these committee hearings where the two parties would be there. They'd come up with a bill. They'd vote to put it before the floor of Congress to vote on it. The Republicans would then change the bill. They would completely substitute the bill which had been debated for another bill, put it out for debate, or actually not even for debate. They'd give them like an hour. Say, okay, we are going to vote on this bill, and they change the rules so they could say there can be no amendments to this bill. So if you were a Democrat and you were out there trying to, like, legislate something, you'd go in there and you'd have a debate and compromise and hammer out what you thought was a good bill. And then they'd go ahead and they'd put in a new bill, and either you didn't know it and you'd vote for it because you thought it was the bill you'd worked on, or you did know that it was a new bill and you couldn't do anything about it. I mean, that sort of stuff went on again and again and again. It was really astounding and short-sighted. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, when I was a kid, my father, you know, like, if there was any time where, like, let's say there was, you know, one slice of pizza left or something, and me and my brother both wanted it, my dad would say, okay, you're going to split it. One of you, you know, cut the pieces in half, and the other guy gets to pick which half he wants. Now, the reason for that was that if the one guy got to cut them in half and figure out which piece went where, that would mean that he could, you know, cut one really huge piece, and the other guy gets a skinny piece, and then give the skinny piece to you know, I could give it to my brother, and say, hey, that's not fair, and I'd say, you know, tough luck, I cut it in half, I got the big piece. But if I was cutting, and my brother got to pick, well, fuck, now that means if I cut a big piece, he could choose the big piece and keep it for himself, and I'm screwed. So it was in my best interest to make that thing as even as possible to maximize the amount of pizza I would get to have. Now, Congress is like, it's like a pizza. Yeah, I'm sorry, that analogy is really looking stupid now. but no, if you go in there and you start changing the rules that the party in power is the one who gets to do everything and the other people are screwed, one would think, you'd say, you know what? What if we lose control someday? Then the other party will have all this power and we will be fucked. The Republicans apparently weren't thinking about that, and now all of these rules that they've made that let the majority party run the show, now the Democrats get to do that. They get to run the show. Although they are saying already, oh, that they're going to revise those old Republican rules and make it so that everybody gets a say, and etc., but, you know. But yeah, so, I mean, I wrote about this during the week. I don't know if y'all that listen to the radio show read my website, but, to me, it was just sort of like, it was feeling, you know, in these past few weeks, it was feeling like Americans were starting to wake up. I feel like Americans were very scared after September 11th, and the only way that worked for them to make that fear go away was to put trust in their leaders. They said, okay, that George W. Bush, he speaks with such confidence. He's got these smart people around him. He says he knows what we need to do. Okay, I believe in him. He's going to save us all. And that was the only way they could drive away this incredible fear. Because, you know, Americans, really, we don't know much about the rest of the world or other countries. They don't teach us that in school. You know, it really is strange, sort of the propagandistic nature of American school system. It really seems to go like, you know, it's... democracy and freedom are great. America invented them. America is the most free and most democratic. So America is the best. Back when the country was founded, or not the... but when the first colonists got here, like in the, say, 1600s, religious movement, the Great Awakening, I believe. And one of the prime ministers, preachers of this time, it was a fellow named John Winthrop, who talked about the city on a hill. And I think that was the start of it. It was basically this idea that the Puritans who would come, they felt that God had chosen them and given them this land to be a beacon, to be a shining example to the rest of the world of what a city should look like. And you know, they were God's chosen people, and it was their job to be an example to the rest of the world of what human beings and Christians were supposed to be. I think this idea has followed the Americans around ever since then. This idea that we're better, we should be an example, we're the chosen ones, and it's part of it is this charmed life. This idea that we can do no wrong, or if we can do wrong, then we're still the best. Something will always come along and save us. We'll always win. It's really dangerous. We have a really dangerous set of beliefs running this country. And, you know, maybe one of these days these will get punctured. But so you have this belief that you're the best, you're wonderful, strongest. Suddenly these terrorists come, these strangers come from over the sea. Countries you've never heard of, organizations you never heard of, for reasons you don't understand. And they kill thousands of people. And nobody saw it coming. So suddenly you're like, fuck. You know, if I didn't see that coming, you know, they could attack us tomorrow and the next day and the next day. You know, and that was the terror. The terrorists did a good job of terrorizing the American people. And, I think that they sort of went into sleepwalking follower mode to drive away the fear of the terrorist attacks. And you know, because of that, that might explain why they would be so angry when us anti-war folks would speak up, us anti-Bush folks, because it was threatening their feelings of safety that they'd regained. You know, if they chose to believe us that the war was a bad idea and the president was incompetent and all that, now suddenly this feeling of fear that they'd driven away by putting faith in the president, that fear could come back. So, But now, you know, it's been like 5 years since the last, you know, since 9/11. There's been no real major terrorist attacks on American soil since then, except maybe the anthrax mail that happened. And I don't know what happened with that. Who did that? We don't even know. You know, that's kind of crazy that nobody's investigated that very much. Osama bin Laden did the 9/11 attacks, and the anthrax, somebody. But yeah, but I feel like people are just starting to wake up. They're saying, you know, I don't feel that afraid anymore. And the kind of the, you know, shaking the cobwebs out of their head, looking around, going, you know, things are looking kind of bad. We're in this war. We're stuck there. We're not helping anybody. Americans are getting killed. We're killing Iraqis. They want us to leave. The president doesn't... If things are going badly and the president just keeps saying we're going to stay the course, that's not good. And then all these Republican scandals hit. Man, it was, you know, Mark Foley was trying to hit on the young, you know, congressional pages, and then Bob Ney's imprisoned for some sort of lobbying scandal, and Tom DeLay was almost, had to quit because he was being indicted, there was a George Allen with his racism, and just a lot of these things just popped up out of nowhere. And I mean, I didn't even pay that much attention, but you just got this overall feeling that there were all of these Republicans in Congress who were corrupt and were doing terrible things, and people just they were kind of fed up. You know, that's what the exit polls that I saw were saying, that I think it was like 2/3 of the people that they talked to said that. Corruption was one of the main issues to them about why they were voting. It was sort of like people were saying, you know, hey, Congress, hey, Republicans, you're stealing our money. You're sending our kids overseas to die. You're trying to seduce our teenagers. You're sleeping with our gay prostitutes. And God damn it, we've had enough. And voted them out. And sorry, the gay prostitute joke I just thought was funny. he wasn't actually running for office. He was an influential member of the evangelical movement. I believe he was part of a conference call, a weekly religious political conference call with the president every week with other powerful religious figures in the country. And then it was discovered that he was using crystal meth and having gay sex with a prostitute. And when he was this pious anti-gay man. So that was very funny. But no, honestly, I do think that had an impact, though. I think there was a lot of Christians out there, a lot of evangelicals and fundamentalists and what have you, who they believed that the Republicans were their guys. You know, they're just like us. They are us. We need to support them and vote for them and keep these godless liberal heathen out of office, because they're going to make us, you know, burn Bibles become Islamic and abort babies. But I think something like this fellow, though, what's his name? Somebody Haggard. Haggard was the pastor's last name. You know, he's found out that he's a closeted homosexual, and this book came out by a fellow who I believe had worked with Bush's faith-based initiatives in the White House, and was saying how the top guys at the White House didn't take the evangelicals seriously and mocked them behind their backs. And then the Mark Foley thing, and the implication that these other senators were covering up his pedophilia. And I think a lot of the Christians out there lost some faith in the Republicans. And it's saying here that almost 1/3 of the white evangelicals in the U.S. During this election voted for Democrats. Now, again, that's one of my biggest questions for what all of this election means, is if that was a one-time deal, or if we're going to see more of that. If this is finally a split, that the evangelicals and the Republican Party are no longer joined at the hip, things could get very interesting. That would be a vote block that would be up for grabs. And, I don't think the Democrats would do a very good job of reaching out to them. They could try, I suppose. I'm also amused. Obviously, Donald Rumsfeld resigned You know, all of the Republicans are denying that it had anything to do with the election, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. Yeah, you see, you know, last week, Bush was saying, yeah, you know, I hope Mr. Cheney and Dick Rumsfeld, or Donald Rumsfeld, I hope they stay with me to the end of my term. And they're doing a great job, and I got great support for these fellas. And then, 1 week later, yeah, me and Rummy were talking, and we figure it's time for a fresh perspective and some new leadership in the Pentagon. And, yeah, that had nothing to do with the election, of course. No, he was a fucking sacrificial lamb, threw him under the train, hoping to save themselves. Now there's talk that the intelligence secretary for the Defense Department under Rumsfeld, that he's going to be resigning too. Sadly, the person they're putting in to replace Rumsfeld is a old crony of George H.W. Bush, the previous Bush president, who he was trying to get confirmed for a position in the CIA, and there were Senate hearings, and he was accused by a number of people of politicizing intelligence when he'd worked at a lower position in the CIA, and he seems to have some sort of ties to the Iran-Contra affair, which, to the younger listeners out there, Iran-Contra was Ronald Reagan wanted to support this group called the Contras in Nicaragua. Nicaragua had been a dictatorship, was overthrown by some socialist rebel forces called the Sandinistas, and were actually going out there and reforming, and they were actually doing a lot of good humanitarian stuff. They were, you know, feeding hungry people and setting up clinics and schools out in the rural areas, and you know, they weren't great, they weren't perfect, but, you know, they were doing okay. And, but yeah, Reagan wanted to support this counter-revolutionary force, who, one of the ways they tried to win the hearts and minds of the people was by destroying all the things that the Sandinistas built. So they were out blowing up schools and medical clinics. I believe that they killed like 30,000 people. The U.S. was giving them guns and training. And at a certain point, Congress said, you know, we're not going to pay for any more funding for this. You know, we think this Contra War is a bad idea. We're not going to let you do it anymore. And so the Reagan folks have to get creative. And they say, you know what? What if we get some weapons, some missiles, and we sell those missiles, and we use that money then to, all, you know, we do all this off the books, sell some missiles, and we'll use the money to buy more weapons for the Contras. Who would buy our missiles? Hey, you know who would like our missiles? Iran. Oh, and you know what? Iran is holding a number of our American citizens hostage there. What if we cut a deal with the terrorists in Iran that we say we never do? Let's agree to sell them these missiles. We'll agree to do that if they'll let loose the hostages, and then we'll take this money from the weapons sale and give it to the other terrorists in Nicaragua who are terrorizing the Nicaraguan people. This went on for years, and the new Defense Department guy is, it was a little fuzzy when I was reading through it. It sounds like at the very least he knew about it and turned a blind eye. I'm not sure how much more he was involved. Hopefully, very little. Let's see here. I'm trying to think what else to say. Oh, and of course we should mention the shadiness in the election. You know, of course, it ended up working out fine that the, apparently, you know, because the Republicans in the past several elections have done a number of sneaky things to prevent people who might vote Democrat from voting. Largely, this was done through racism and behind-the-scenes selection. For example, if there's a black neighborhood, which, you know, African-Americans are generally much more likely to vote for Democrats because the Republicans are much more openly racist, they'll do something like, okay, well, in this black district here, we have to give out a certain number of voting machines so that people can vote. Let's give them very few voting machines, and let's give them the older voting machines, which have a higher chance of breaking or not working properly. And that way, if there's few machines, people have to wait in line, they'll get tired of waiting, and they'll go home without voting. if we give an old machine that messes up their ballot, that means that we can throw that in the pile of spoiled ballots if the ballot isn't printed right, and then we don't have to count it. Also, there have been a lot of tricky things with, you know, as we all remember, in Florida in 2000, there was the fraudulent list of convicts. In Florida, there's a rule saying, you know, if you have a felony on your record, you can't vote. So they came up with this list of people who should be taken off of the voter rolls because they'd been arrested and they'd been in prison. Most of the names were African American, and quite a few of them had not ever been to prison. And it was totally made up, and they went there to vote. And the thing said, sorry, you can't vote because of your criminal record. And they said, we don't have a criminal record. And they said, tough. Stuff like that was going on. Also, the Republicans tried to find every reason they could think of to challenge the legitimacy of new registrants. People who had just registered to vote, they would... They sent out a bunch of postcards to people who were new registrants, and if they didn't write back or if the mail bounced back for some reason, then they said, oh, that must be a fraudulent address, and that person should be stricken from the rolls. In many states, there were these new laws that were passed that you had to have some sort of ID with you, which generally, you know, if you're poorer, you're less likely to have an ID, because if you've lost it, you probably haven't put in the money or time or effort to get a new one. One of the worst stories I heard was in Tucson, Arizona. There were these Minutemen guys, you know, the anti-immigrant assholes. There were three guys. One had a clipboard with a petition calling for Arizona to be an English-only state. Legally, the language of Arizona would be English. And so he had this clipboard with his petition, and he also had a cameraman with him. So if he was there, he would walk up to. So interestingly, he would only walk up to Latinos who were coming to vote, and he'd start talking to them about this petition. And if it didn't look like they understood him, which, you know, if there's an awful lot of folks in this country who are here legally or are citizens who, you know, aren't as comfortable in English. And he starts talking to them in English, and if they weren't speaking English well enough or understanding him in his mind, he then had a cameraman take their picture, and then they were going to challenge this person's vote, say that they suspected this person was an illegal alien trying to vote, and they would post that person's picture on the internet as a suspected illegal alien. And the third guy, who was the third guy? He was standing there with a handgun on his belt. So you're walking up to vote, and maybe your English isn't all that good, and these three white guys walk up to you. One's got a clipboard, one's got a camera in your face, and one you can tell has a gun. How long do you stay there before you're trying to vote? And, oh, fuck. These white guys, what are they doing? Who do they work for? That guy's got a gun. I'm going to leave. I don't want to get shot. That was one of the worst things I heard of in all of this. I don't think they were there for that long. I don't know how many people they actually impacted the vote on. But what a bunch of fucking fascists. Man. Then there was another really sleazy story about a Maryland campaign where two Republicans were running for office. And they decided they might get more votes if they fooled people into thinking they were Democrats. So they went and they printed up these fake voter information pamphlets, which claimed that they were Democrats. Okay, I gotta take that back slightly. We don't know for sure who did that. Obviously, it was somebody who was in favor of their campaign. But so far, there are no direct ties to those two. I think it's Steve Ehrlich and Michael Steele in Maryland. So they have these fake information pamphlets, and I guess they figure that they can't get people to give out this fraudulent information who live around there because they would know. So they went down to Philadelphia. They went to the homeless shelters and rehab clinics in Philadelphia to find homeless people who would work for $100 for the day. Bust about 200 of them up to this African American neighborhood in Maryland to give out these fraudulent pamphlets. People saw the pamphlets and they freaked out. And the Philadelphians are like, I didn't know. I'm from Philadelphia. I don't know who you guys are that you guys are voting for. And I was reading some news articles. A lot of the people who were tricked into going and doing this for the money, they were just really upset. You know, one guy was saying, I'm maybe homeless and I need the money, but I know right and wrong. You know, it's, he wasn't out there doing this sleazily knowing what he was doing. He was just upset. You know, he, once he found out, he said he threw all the pamphlets away. And, you know, those guys still lost. which is one of the high points of all this, that these people tried to trick everyone and failed. Sadly, we do have some bad results here in California. We got Schwarzenegger back. He had the one. He had a couple of good environmental ideas lately, and his one to spend all this money on funding for alternative energy sources that got booted down here in my city of San Diego. It was voted that the they can contract out city services to private corporations, which I can't see how anybody would think that was a good idea. Yeah, we're going to privatize city services with these outside companies, so we have less accountability over them, and there's no guarantee they'll be any cheaper. All these people who are currently working for the city that on these projects are going to lose their jobs. Just sounds like a bad call. My energy level's winding down. I think I need to rest up and put on a little audio for you. Next up, we're going to have, I mentioned earlier, Jello Biafra. He will be in San Diego on the 17th, which is a week from tomorrow, at the Epicenter and at Lose Records. He was one of the fellows who helped politicize me when I was in high school, actually. I was reading a lot of stuff. I was reading some Frank Zappa and Abby Hoffman and Gore Vidal and Noam Chomsky and Lenny Bruce. A lot of smart folks from the 60s and the present who were very politically minded people. Jello Biafra was doing some spoken word at the time. I heard a few of his albums that were very interesting. And back in 91, he put together a spoken word piece called Die for Oil, Sucker, which was right around the time of the first Gulf War, and was about, you know, the ridiculousness of the war and what it was, you know, what was really behind it, this drive for oil and power. And he has redone that track. He's reworked it for the modern age, for the war on terror, which, he has an unfunny joke in here, which is the initials for the war on terror spells twat. yeah, I don't think that's that funny. But yeah, so this is Die for Oil, Sucker, the war on terrorism version off of his new album, In the Grip of Official Treason. So let me turn the music down, put this track on, and I think y'all will enjoy it.
Hey, you! You look like you're just the ripe age to be drafted! Does that bother you? Can't fight Iraq and Iran and North Korea all at the same time. There ain't enough troops. There was a sign at Jonestown behind Jim Jones's dead body, and it said, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Which would you rather sacrifice, your road hog or your life? Die for oil, sucker. Born on the firecracker 4th of July, raised on football and MTV, never felt what it's like to have to fight to stay free. Vietnam, just a Time Life book memory. The mask is off again, this time nobody cares, but you can't keep dancing with your legs blown away. Die for oil, sucker. 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 You too can get your face shot off, so Exxon and Halliburton keep their profits going up. The Cold War's over, it was all a mirage. We could use that money, we got problems to solve, but we're not allowed a chance to live and prosper in peace, because our president's sick with mad cowboy disease. King George never cared about 911 families' pain. How can we exploit this for financial gain? Cheney already had a handy map of Iraq's oil wells, pipes, and terminals they were scheming to snatch. Hijack all that crude from the Chinese and French, so we then have all their economies by the nuts. Then bring in the cronies to feed at the trough. Halliburton and Bechtel ripping everyone off. Never was to fight terror, liberate anyone. Set record oil profits, doubling 2 years in a row. This is what our soldiers are really fighting for. Die for oil, sucker. 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 It'll kill the poor, even faster than crack. Ship them out to war, make sure they don't come back. Give them tanks that fall apart and helicopters that crash. Humvee armor they forgot to attach. Just like Tom Cruise in a wheelchair. Does our government support our troops? They don't care. Cut their pay, yank their benefits, go beg in the street. Won't even admit Gulf War syndrome exists. Some are coming home brain damage, post-traumatic stress. Which one will be the next Timothy McVeigh? Die for oil, sucker. 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 Saddam, so egocentric, he even replaced Mickey Mouse on watches with his own face. For years he was our tyrant we thought we could use. We sold him his guns and his nerve gas, too. Now he and Bin Laden and Iran's Ayatollahs are laughing like mad because we're right where they want us. Sole superpower can't conquer Iraq, and it's costing so much our economy's tanked. Washington generals are losing again. Now let's see how bad we can lose in Iran. Still think we can waltz right in, colonize their hearts and minds? The Islamic world's now so damn mad we may never get out of this alive.
Mission accomplished. We got the job done.
Take a country that ain't a terror threat, turn it into one. Bush is wrong. They don't hate us because of our freedom. They hate us because we won't let them have any freedom. We promised democracy. Give them Abu Ghraib, Phosphorus, and Fallujah. What are they supposed to think? 36 terror attacks in 2003, 3,000 in 2004. Does anyone still think the War on Terror, Inc. has made us any safer at all? W draws his pom-pom and cheers, bring 'em on! Leaves troops like sitting ducks for insurgents to bomb. See how he smirks and turns up his nose as he sends away more who will never come home. Landmines, suicides, kill more troops every day. A hint from the locals that the longer we stay, we're the ones in harm's way wherever we lay. And we'll pay and we'll pay and we'll pay and we'll pay. Die for oil, sucker. 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 What's so sick about this is there's a better way. Stop selling guns to dictators and Israel. Don't need to keep ourselves hostage to oil when cars and trucks and who knows what can run on biofuel. Road rage swine won't give up SUVs. By law, let's make you the first draftees. Go get your own goddamn oil. It ain't up to us to protect your lifestyle. Running the world like our sweatshop can't last. Climate change and terror's biting us all in the ass. Think they like their kings who sell us oil? Think of the cost to keep our army there. When the only way left to bleed oil out of the ground is soldiers' guns treating Arabs like slaves. And like Hitler and Stalin, we put people in camps, torture them in secret like our pal Pinochet. What are we letting ourselves become? Abu Ghraib reserves back home were prison guards. If this is what they say is funny over there, what are they planning for us over here? Like Milosevic or the Nazis, when they're gassing gays and Jews, too many who know what's up, give up. There's nothing we can do. Like hell there ain't, and if we don't, who will? We know our rights, so more than ever, use them now. There's two superpowers. Just one's the USA. The other's resistance all over the world that will not go away. We stopped Vietnam. We won our civil rights true. So burn your draft card, burn the flag, and burn the Pentagon, too. On TV, it's a feel-good tabloid war. No bodies, no wounded, no funerals, no gore. Fake reality show where we always win. So much yellow ribbon that we're hanging ourselves. Pentagon parrot pundits won't admit we exist. What that says to me is their owners are scared. That we are as strong as we've been in the past, and we will stop this war and their globalization scams. Yellow ribbon McCarthyism can't hold us too long. We support our troops most when we say, bring them home! So be all you can be. Say no to the Army, Air Force, Marines. Get off your butt before Bush blows it off. Don't die for oil. Don't be a sucker.
Love.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Lying Media Bastard Show. I'm Jake. How y'all doing? That is, there was more Chiba doing Part of the Process. Before that, we had a second song by MDC, Millions of Dead Cops, Church and State, a wee song, a short, very short song. And before that, we had... phone's ringing. Hold on. I really should just stop answering the phones here. Or if I'm going to answer the phone, I should probably turn the microphone down, because I think you all just heard me. So before MDC, we had Depeche Mode doing People Are People. And a band who I'm going to massacre their name. They're either Rerex or it's French. It's like Rerex. A song called Dia de los Muertos. And we started off with a nice little rant by Jello Biafra. Die for oil, sucker. But yeah, let me ponder. So many things to speak on. Let's see. Well, I guess we'll talk about the Democrats. They do allegedly have some plans for their tenure as being in charge in the Congress. They said for their first 100 hours. They're just what they want to do is they want to change the rules, as I was telling you earlier about the ways that the Republicans sort of rigged the rules so that it was in the majority party's favor. The Democrats are talking about putting those back to where they were, and to restore civility and give the minority party a broader role. That's the Democrats all over, isn't it? Restoring civility. They're also about increasing the federal minimum wage, enacting the Homeland Security recommendations of the bipartisan 9/11 Commission, promoting stem cell research, and reducing university costs by making tuition tax deductible and halving interest rates on student loans. Other priorities include giving the government the power to negotiate with drug companies to lower the prices in the Medicare prescription drug program, eliminating what they say are Republican-backed incentives to shift jobs overseas, and rolling back subsidies for big oil companies and using those funds to promote alternative energy sources instead. So, you know, all of those sound like fairly worthy things, but... like I was saying, I still have to take many a issue with the Democrats. And, you know, part of it, I guess, isn't really their fault. It's just sort of the idea that, you know, voting Democrat is what solves all your problems, obviously, is silly. You know, you didn't vote for pollution. You didn't vote for a society where you have to work a job you hate every day till you die. You didn't vote for a rape culture. You didn't vote for an economic and agricultural system that's unsustainable and destroys the environment. A lot of these things are, you know, the big businesses that are behind them, or aspects of the culture, people's tastes, media. You know, a lot of it is not something that you can just vote away. But on top of that, you know, the Democrats do lots of terrible things. Let me find this bit here. This is a blogger I found named Arthur Silber, who has a lot of good things to say. Several times he keeps talking about some of the components of our national myth. And his version goes like this. And this myth seems to be held by most folks, and this would be, you know, cut across Democratic and Republican circles. Let me turn my music up. The West has the answer to successful human life. Since it does, and because certain elements in the rest of the world have now chosen to attack us on our ground, we must enlighten those benighted portions of the globe in our defense. Our chosen method of enlightenment is brute military force to be deployed even against countries that did not threaten us. The lack of a genuine threat is no argument against spreading our version of civilization, for our mission is grounded not only in self-defense, it is also a moral mission. Our success and our peace directly correlates to our virtue. Those countries and those civilizations that do not enjoy the same success and peace are without virtue. In the most extreme, and one could argue most consistent, version of this tale, non-Western parts of the world are less than human, they are subhuman by choice. They are immoral and sometimes evil. Since we represent the good and they represent the evil, we are surely entitled to improve them, by invasion and bombing if necessary. They do not threaten us today, they might at some indeterminate time in the future. While we might not kill many innocent civilians in our campaign of civilization, those who survive will be infinitely better off than they would have been otherwise. Besides, how innocent can any of them be, since they are members of inferior, less than fully human civilizations, and since they are so by choice? This is a slightly overly modern version of the myth, if you ask me. Again, the democratic version of this, the liberal version, usually has a lot more to do with the soft empire. Not as much about the bombing and the occupation, a little bit more about economic trade and treaties, which sort of dominate what other countries are allowed to do. I'll talk about that in a second. So let me just talk again in my rush to make everyone see the Democrats are not the answer. Let's just go over Clinton. Bill Clinton, last time we had a Democrat in power. First of all, the Defense of Marriage Act, which was a law that said that, I actually have the text here. No state need recognize a marriage between persons of the same sex, even if the marriage was concluded or recognized in another state. And the federal government may not recognize same-sex or polygamous marriages for any purpose, even if concluded or recognized by one of the states. So Bill Clinton was the first, and he signed that. In the Senate, the vote was 85-14 on that vote, even though it was Republicans and Democrats. And in the House, it was 342 in favor, 67 against. So Democrats and Republicans generally voted together against same-sex marriage. I don't know why there's this idea that the Democrats are so gay-friendly. Obviously, they got no problem pounding on gay people when it comes down to it. Probably the one of the worst things that we saw under Clinton was NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is the thing that let companies move across borders with no troubles, yet left it very difficult for human beings to actually cross. So corporations moved, took their factories with them, and a lot of Americans lost jobs in the factory sector when the factories moved to Mexico. A lot of American produce and vegetables and agriculture was now being shipped to Mexico. Produce and vegetables that were manufactured by American agribusiness, which can do it at a very low price and that receives a very high subsidy from the U.S. government, and were able to sell these products in Mexico so cheaply that the local growers went out of business. And now, since they had no farms to work on, they now went to go work at the factories, which had just conveniently moved nearby for sweatshop wages. Canada, similar things happened there. So that was the last time I read the statistics, it said about 1 million jobs were lost in the U.S. and I think like 1 million farms. Very small farms. No, I think 1 million farm jobs, they said, were lost in Mexico because of agricultural imports going into Mexico. Now, of course, Clinton, this was Clinton's doing. The previous Bush had tried to get this passed but couldn't, because it seemed too Republican a thing. Clinton was able to put a friendly liberal face on it and get it passed. And they all kept talking as though this was good for everybody, when, a bright junior high school kid could see how that's not going to be the case. And it was worse. They didn't just go for the North American version. There was a lot of work on the free trade area of the Americas, which would be sort of North and South America. There was the multilateral agreement on investments, which would say that any time a company or individual investor invested money in a project in one country, if anything happened to threaten that investment in that company in that country, whether it be legislation or popular, or activism or popular revolt against something that they didn't like, they could sue that government and get their money back. That was defeated. It was a very secretive thing. And activists found out about it and tried to push it out, and succeeded. Again, that was during the Clinton years, and of course the World Trade Organization, which is the same sort of thing, where any country that's a member can have their laws challenged by a corporation outside of that, their country, claiming that any sort of regulation or law they have is a barrier to free trade. For example, you could be, have a country with a law that said, we won't allow people to sell apples with poison in them here. And then, you know, you're the head of Poison Apple Company in France or something, and you challenge it and you say, yeah, I think that's a barrier to free trade. I should be able to sell my poison apples in there. And then they take it to the World Trade Organization court, WTO court, and they almost always side with the person who's making the challenge. So they break down the law that you made to protect your country from poison apples, and France gets to sell their poison apples. That's what globalization is, folks. It's bad news. Also, during the Clinton years, obviously the AIDS epidemic was still going very strong in Africa. I don't know if it's any better or worse than it was then. But at the time, the AIDS drugs were so expensive that most Africans could not afford them. I believe most Africans made in a year about what it would cost to buy drugs for 1 month. That's how expensive they were. So the country of South Africa said, you know what? We're going to start making generic versions of these drugs. We don't want to violate anyone's intellectual property, but people are dying, and according to international law, you actually can, for emergency situations, if a company refuses to give you the right to make generic versions of the drug, you can actually pay them what you think is fair and start making generics. The Clinton administration pressured South Africa to not do that. They actually threatened some sorts of trade sanctions against South Africa if they tried to make affordable AIDS drugs to treat their sick people. Clinton also, in an attempt to fight terrorism, blew up a pharmaceutical plant in the Sudan. I believe it manufactured about half of the medicine that went to the people of the Sudan. They claimed it was a nerve gas factory for Osama bin Laden. No. It was not. it was studied quite a bit after the fact. No, it made medicine. I don't believe there were any apologies or any reparations, and the people of the Sudan just had to try to cut back on the medicine. Clinton was also behind the Welfare Reform Act, which tried to tell all sorts of people who were dependent on welfare to live, they had a limited amount of time to get off of it. Some of them, and some of the states, I believe it was a state breakdown of who got to say what about it. In some, to get your welfare payments, you had to do, quote, job training, which just meant you had to go work at a participating company for free. And if you were working for free, the company wasn't paying you anything, you were working to get your welfare check from the state. Now you were in direct competition with people for those jobs, so it was it helped flood the job market and drive some wages down in some places. Obviously, in some cases it worked out. People were like, "Oh, geez, I got to get myself a job." And some people were able to pull themselves out of there, and others weren't and aren't getting money, and nobody seems to care what has happened to them. Clinton also invaded Kosovo in Europe. There was a lot of talk about how it was stopping genocide, but it was very obvious that if you're a country that's doing any sort of genocidal acts and you get attacked, what always happens is they intensify. You intensify your attacks on a certain population. It's my understanding that prior to the invasion of Kosovo, about 2,000 to 3,000 people had been killed, and then other studies showed that as a direct result of the U.S. attacks, around 2,000 to 3,000 people were killed. So that was fine. In addition to that, it was so shady. The U.S. and other European countries were trying to negotiate a deal with the Serbs, with Milosevic, so that he would pull out of Kosovo. And he proposed, Milosevic and his diplomats proposed a plan where they would pull out of Kosovo, and a UN force would have the right to go within Kosovo to make sure that Serbia was not doing anything there. The U.S. countered with an offer to have a U.S.-based force, not a UN-based force, have Serbia pull out, and then the U.S. forces would have the ability to go anywhere within all of Yugoslavia and do anything they wanted. This is quite literally the result of a military occupation. That's the sort of treaty you get when you've been defeated in a war and somebody's occupying you. So obviously, and that was the U.S. position. And then when Milosevic said no to that, then they began saying, oh, he only understands force. He's a dictator. That's what we got to do to him. And then very little known, one of the guys I work with at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, he talked to some reporters who were at those treaty talks, and two different reporters said that they had been in a meeting or, you know, press conference or something off the record where, so, I believe it was Madeleine Albright, said that they feel that the reason they did this is they were totally stonewalling. They were totally making this up so that, giving terms that Serbia would never accept, and said, we think they need a little bombing. So what they thought would be a two-day bombing attack that would make Serbia return to the bargaining table turned into, I believe, 71 days of bombing on innocent people in Kosovo, thanks to Bill Clinton. But, yes, I mean, just us here in America, we have some pretty huge problems, and we cause a lot of problems around the world due to, you know, the economic needs of the country, the greedy people who live here, the corporations, the invasions to make sure other countries do what we want. None of that gets solved by Democrats. That gets made worse frequently by Democrats, which is why I'm opposed to Democrats. And, actually, I got a song here I'd queued up that I thought also would do some good in describing why, you know, the electoral system doesn't save us. We've got to save us. You know, it's great that we got the Republicans out of office. And as I said earlier, we may have saved the lives of hundreds of thousands of Iranians, because now I don't think Bush has the clout to get his insane Iran war. But let me put this on for you. This is Norman Nowrocki. Or is it Norman Nowrock? I can't know. A song called Why Am I an Anarchist? Where he goes and talks about many of the problems of society and puts them in a very simple way. Thought that'd be a good one. But yeah, the show's pretty close to wrapping up. I got here late, so I'm going to go a little late. But blah, blah, blah. I'm Jake. Thanks for listening. Music.
Politicians steal our future because women can't walk the streets safely, because I want to breathe fresh, clean air, because hope, freedom, and dignity are never on special at Walmart's, because capitalism is a scam. Why? neither the sun, the moon, or the stars are for sale. Because corporate greed destroys lakes, rivers, forests. Because I'm not afraid to dream. Because I refuse to remain silent. Because it's time to shut down McDonald's. Because I have friends who can't afford to visit the dentist. Because one homeless family is too much. Because the state blames and attacks the poor, but rewards its friends. Because no fat cat lying politician ever has to wait for the bus. Because I want social revolution. Now.
My mother's house is 17. Been a grown ass married man ever since. Family reunions I'm talked about but never seen. Cause I learned that some of them can be a nemesis. Got a lot of scars on me, and I'll tell you the stories. You promise not to take offense, homie. Sit back, let hand bring the beat in. I'll try to find a place to start to make sense now. The first time I was pushed out blind, cold and naked, spanked on the ass to breathe. An immigrant from heaven on earth with a work visa. I announced myself with gasping screams. Before blight and white supremacy heisted my innocence, I was living out life behind the picket fence. Happy go lucky, scared of no one. With only the exception, I'm allergic to the sun. Didn't know I had an image that a camera couldn't capture. 100% I lost manufacture. But then came the laughter, an outsider battered, picket fence shattered. I saw myself as a bastard tag along, harassed and spat upon by the children of slave masters who passed it on. The saddest songs have been sung at the hands of who I called a race from hell. It's a disgrace from hell. Fell face first in the self-hate, burst into tears when I hear my own hellish name cursed. If I seem timid, it's only because every mirror that I saw back then had the earth's ugliest human being in it. And with that said, they would kick me till they got tired or I act dead. And I have to tell y'all that the obvious part is I always feel free when I'm talking to God. Alone on the playground, Friday afternoon, and the old sister who hums gospel tunes. I saw her, noticed her getting closer. She approached me and put a knowing hand on my shoulder and hooked my feelings. Cause she looked at me in a way that adults very seldom look at children. And with the wisdom only earned by years, she read my thoughts and she welled up with tears and said, "You look the way you do because you're special. Not the short bus way, I mean that God's gonna test you. And all of this pain is training for the day when you will have to lead with the gift God gave to you. Grown folks don't see it, but the babies do. And there's a chance that you can save a few. And time would prove that she started my movement. She didn't tell me to take it, she told me to use it. Use it. Second in time. Papa ripped the womb open early and exposed me to the coldness of life prematurely. Where mom's love used to live, now housed denial. And when that decayed, it made her bitter and spiteful. But me and my runaway, we shared something special. Rolling to the sunset, could barely touch the petals. No strings attached, screaming, fuck Geppetto. We may live in the gutter, but we cling to each other. A week before my son came, I caught a bad bounce and had to step to mom with my hands out. And mama proved the two of us could not live in that house. She lied to the police so they would throw us in the streets. And separating from you is something I feel I must do. It's not that I don't love you, it's more that I don't trust you. It's been a year since I've seen a living relative, and it's just now that I'm starting to live. But while I'm sitting here choking on tears, wishing I didn't care, feeling all alone in this hemisphere, I swear upon everything I hold dear. And then my wife come near, and I hear a voice whisper in my ear, you're going through all of this because you're special. Not no superstar shit, I mean that God had to test you. And all of this pain has been training for the day when you will lead us with the gift God gave to you. Your parents might not see it, but your babies do. And there's a chance that you can save a few. And time would prove that she started my movement. She didn't tell me to take it, she told me to use it. So I use it.
Folks, Long Media Bastards radio show. That was just Brother Ali doing Picket Fences for that Norman Nowrock, Why Am I an Anarchist. Probably going to go out in just a minute. Just wanted to mention, I am actually hearing, we're hearing two ways the Republicans are trying to spin their massive loss. First, some are trying to actually say that this is proof that they're saying that the people didn't like the Republicans, but not that they were... That they were too far right. They weren't right enough. You see, if only the Republicans had been super ultra duper conservative, then they would have won this election. This was a repudiation of their lack of conservativeness. The other one is saying that since many of the Democrats who won are conservative Democrats, this is a victory for conservatism. Although apparently some of the Democratic winners are on the moderate conservative side, some aren't. So, that one's obviously not true, and the first one is just kind of silly. The idea that, yeah, you know, these Republicans just aren't conservative enough for me, so I better vote for somebody who's a liberal. That makes plenty of sense to me. So just wanted to mention that before I get out of here, because that's crazy bullshit. Gonna go out of here. Normally I have my little closing theme song, but I'm running short on time, so I'm gonna go with this one I've been meaning to play. Jello Biafra again. Was when he was in the Dead Kennedys, they were very famous for their song California Uber Alice, which is a song they did about the governor of California at the time, Jerry Brown. And then when he was replaced by Ronald Reagan, they did another version about Ronald Reagan. Then the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy did a cover version about I can't remember his name. Who was that asshole? Wilson, I think. Pete Wilson. And then I think somebody might have done one about Gray Davis, I'm not sure. But now we have Jello Biafra with the Melvins doing California Uber Alice, 21st century version with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So we're going to go out on that one. Thanks all for listening. I'll be back next week. And I'll be writing. My friends are harassing me into writing more on the website, so give a listen. I'll be on there. Not give a listen, give a read. I'm going to go to bed. Oh, LyingMediaBastards.com is the place to go for that.
Governor Schwarzenegger. Pretty soon I'll be dictator when they make me president. Democracy is going away. Hasta la vista, baby. I will command all of you. Kindergarten cop in every school. Or I will terminate you. California, over Alice. California, over Alice. Over Alice. California, over Alice. California. Enron will control you. Let's change the reality.